Hello, my spooky friends.
My name is Cassie.
And I'm Caitlin.
And welcome in to I'd Survive. Wow, I sounded chipper today.
We're like so smiley that it feels like I'm not trying not to laugh, but like I don't know what it is. It's just bizarre.
This is us. This is the real us.
This is us.
We are just so happy, always just trying not to laugh.
Mm-hmm.
That's us 24/7.
24/7. Ha 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 ha. You know? You know how it is. Oh, my friend Cassie Karma Disco, which I just confused some people. I just realized they don't all know you as that, but that's okay. How are you? It was your birthday over the weekend. Everybody say happy birthday, Cassie.
Yes, we're so old.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about that.
We don't have to talk about the birthdays. I never get a year older.
Mm-hmm.
No, it was good. I haven't watched any horror. I've had quite a wholesome week, actually, of watching like Moana and starting Heated Rivalry and then diving into 15 episodes of Glee, reliving my childhood. Like I've been needing happiness.
That's very
and I
fair.
Got it this week. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
good. I have watched literally nothing at all. So
really,
except
yeah.
for queso. Oh my god, that thing you sent me about queso. Sorry.
I saw a TikTok that was like, you're either a girl who watches Love Island or you're a girl who watches queso. I was like, this is me and Caitlin. I'm Love Island. She's queso.
Yep.
I mean, I also love queso, yes. but I would choose Love Island. I've been sat for Love Island. Except, do you know what?
What?
It got to the point where it pissed me off so bad. I haven't watched the final two episodes and I'm not going to.
Oh. It's that
I'm not
serious.
I don't care. I don't care. Like, I'm bored.
Oh, wow.
Boring. And I don't know if I'm going to watch it next year. If I watch it next year, I'll probably watch the UK and not the USA because USA is – they just don't do it how I want them to.
They're just doing it wrong.
Yeah. Like, on a, like a production level, they have changes that just, like, are seriously detrimental. And I'm just like, this is so dumb. So
– yikes.
Yeah. I guess that could be considered my horror, having to finally give up on – Love Island with two episodes to go.
That is rough. Last time I did that, it was when I was watching, you know, the show You?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I gave up on that too. I think I started three. I don't think I finished three, actually.
That's so fair. I was watching the final season and they like did something that made me so mad that I said, yeah, I'm good.
Oh, I'm good. That's the worst.
Yeah. I just left. Said, never mind.
Man. But you finished this movie.
I did watch this one that we're going to talk about today, which this, you know what? I got to give a shout out. You know who told me to watch this movie? Jess.
That's very exciting.
Yes. She had brought it up and then I happened to go on Shudder and it was like coming soon, Ghost Ship. And I was like, it's a sign.
Weird. Yeah. You got
to
do it.
I was like, we have to do Ghost Ship.
That's fine.
And you've never heard of Ghost Ship at all.
No.
That is.
But I love that it's 2002.
Yes.
That's like such a fun era of horror.
Absolutely. It feels so 2002.
Love.
In all the best ways, and some would probably argue the worst ways. But that's okay with me and you. You know how we are.
Yes.
We're like, yeah, give us the vibes. So yes, Ghost Ship is a 2002 film directed by Steve Beck and written by Mark Hanlon and John Pogue, all of whom you're very unlikely to know.
Okay.
This film was shot in Australia and Canada on a budget of $20 million and grossed $68.3 million worldwide.
Pretty good.
So I would say they did well.
Yeah.
I don't know. The film has not been well received by audiences or critics.
Oh.
It's got itself a 14% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh.
Which I do think is a little harsh. I think the 2.5 on Letterboxd is a little more fair for the film.
Okay.
14 is crazy.
Okay.
That's like bottom of the barrel films, you know?
Yeah.
And there's actually a lot of really cool information on how this film was shot and the behind the scenes of how they did things, but I'm not going to get into it because spoiler territory, but I do recommend checking out that stuff for anyone who's interested in it because it is pretty cool, especially given the year. They did some cool stuff in 2002.
Okay. Cool.
And I'm just going to remind everybody that we do have a Patreon. if you want to check that out, where you can see the video versions of the episodes. We also have like bonus content over there, which is kind of fun. And then you can also check out the Discord linked down below, which has the worksheet that you can fill out along with us if you want to get your own score for the episode. So feel free to do that. And let's get into it. Our film starts out with some beautiful old-timey romantic music. It's very magical feeling, very pretty, as we come upon a large cruise ship in the middle of the ocean.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you right now.
Yes.
Would you, or have you, I don't know, go on a cruise?
I have not. It's crazy that you are asking me question 1A right now. Right from the start.
Yeah.
And it's like, honestly, if I got invited, like I might go, but it's definitely not something I'm going to seek out kind of vibes.
Okay. I really am scared of cruises.
Yeah.
The amount of people that disappear on cruises really terrifies me. And I don't like the idea of just like being stuck on a boat anyways.
Nope, me neither.
The one thing my mom did once was a river cruise. And that might be a bit different, I think, where you're like constantly docking and like you're like near, you know, you're not just out there.
In the middle of the ocean where you can see nothing around you.
Yeah. And you know about the poop cruise.
I do know about the poop cruise.
Oh my God. I don't want that to happen. Yeah, but I just, there's so many things that can go wrong. So maybe I'm starting off on a good foot here.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe you're doing well. You're doing pretty well.
Yeah.
So it's interesting the way this movie starts out because it doesn't feel like a horror film. Our like script and title card are pink and like cursive and it's like ghost ship and it's all pretty and nice. And there's a very fancy party being held on the main deck of the ship. There's women in dresses, men in their suits, and there's a woman up on stage wearing all red as she sings a song in Italian. Mm-hmm. Couples sway gracefully with their partners on the dance floor. Waiters carry trays of drinks. People are enjoying their meals. Off to the sides, it's a little girl. She seems to be the only child here, and she's playing with this collection of blocks that are all like attached together, but you can spin them around and manipulate them to like spell words and stuff. It's just like a little kid's toy. And she spells out, "I am so bored," with the blocks.
Okay, yes.
Valid. This is not for a child right now.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the men in uniform goes up to this little girl and offers her his hand, inviting her to dance. So she does. And before long, we do realize he's actually the captain of the ship. It's very sweet. The girl has a big smile on her face. And we cut to a shot of a hand entering the frame and it like pushes a lever up. We're like, strange. Immediately, some coiled wire begins to spin. And the music gets concerningly ominous. The shots jump around, the coiled wire, the dance floor, the wires around the ship, the wire beside the dance floor, when all of a sudden the wire snaps and things start getting pulled in every which direction. And then one of those thin metal wires flies horizontally across the entire dance floor with no resistance, passing through every single person.
What? Wait. I thought we were going to get one decapitation.
The entire dance floor.
How were they all? I just can't imagine what this is looking like visually.
My jaw fell to the floor on the opening scene. So I went, oh my God. And this is the, like, what this film is mostly known for is this opening scene because it is that good.
Oh, I love it. Is it zigzagging or is it like they were just somehow all in a line perfectly at that time?
No, it's like the whole dance floor is just full and there's a wire that goes from one side of the dance floor to the other and it like sweeps across and just goes through everyone.
Oh, it's that big.
Yeah. This is like a big ass wire.
Oh my God.
Cut straight through the whole dance floor.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, literally everyone. Okay.
We'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
Pretty much. So the music stops, and as you would expect, the people on the floor have gone still, completely still and rigid, but their eyes continue to, like, look around.
Whoa.
And they're sharing these horrified looks with one another in silence. The bloody wire creaks now as it sways, and slowly people begin to drop. So what's happening here, torsos are sliding off pairs of legs. People are being cut like at different angles and their bodies are just slide. It's just like they literally slide right off.
Yeah.
We see a champagne glass that gets cut in half, like a guy's hand gets cut off. But it's like slowly these pieces start to drop.
Uh-huh.
In the middle of the dance floor, the little girl stands horrified. She was short enough that she fit fully beneath
right.
the wire. And her arms are still wrapped around the captain, and she looks up at him.
Oh.
And he had been leaning down to hug the girl. So his cut is straight through his mouth. And he leans forward, and like the top of his head just slides off onto the floor next to her. Yes, so all the bodies have hit the floor, and the girl starts to hyperventilate before she lets out a blood-curdling scream. And then we're going to cut to present day. So that is your opening scene.
Oh my God. I don't know if you know this answer. Was that, is she stranded?
Oh,
or was like,
we'll get back to this opening scene.
Oh my God. Okay.
But it's such a good like effects moment. Mm-hmm. It just looks so good. And it's, I loved it. I loved it so much.
Oh my gosh. I'm excited to see it myself.
Yeah. Apparently, I mean, this movie is like available everywhere for streaming, but the whole movie, I also realized after, is on YouTube.
Perfect.
Multiple people have uploaded the entire film. I guess they don't give a shit about this movie. So we cut to present day. A tugboat is out on the waters pulling what looks like an old vessel of sorts. There's a bit of panic amongst the crew as the old vessel they're pulling is starting to sink. And if it does, they either have to let it go or sink with it. Those are their options. So we have two guys in the main, I put control room. I don't have good boat knowledge.
Sure.
So people who know boats, I'm looking at you, Jeremy, are going to get really mad at me when I use words today, but just, it's fine. So they're in this main control room of the tugboat. And one of these men is Murphy. He is clearly the captain. He's being looked to as the leader. The other guy, his name is Greer, G-R-E-E-R, and he seems to be the one that's very knowledgeable about the boat itself. At the back of the boat, we have three other crew members. There's Dodge and Munder. These are just two crew guys whose personalities kind of blend together a bit in this film. They're like always together, mm-hmm. and it's just like, just know it's Dodge and Munder.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have Epps, E-P-P-S. If you couldn't tell, these people go by their last names.
Mm-hmm.
She is a badass. She's the mm-hmm. one on her way over to the vessel to see if she can actually patch it up before it sinks. And the captain's trying to be like, no, don't do that. But she's like, no, no, no. I'm going to get this shit done. So Epps evaluates the damage and says they have 5 minutes, the max amount of time they have before the ship sinks. Both Greer and Murphy are like, no, not worth it. We don't have the time for that. We're going to cut her loose. Murphy tells Epps via walkie-talkie to come back, but nah, she thinks she can do it, and she gets to work. When Dodge and Munder yell at her to give up, she screams back that it took them 3 months to get this ship off the bottom of the ocean, and she refuses to lose her now, which I can't really blame her for. Three months of work down the drain when she thinks she can save it. I don't blame her for that.
Absolutely.
So she gets to work, and Dodge and Munder reluctantly join her. They have to help her out. Meanwhile, while they're mending the break, Murphy's just like yelling insults at them through the walkie-talkie, telling them to get back here right now. He's like, do you want me to come down there and kick your ass? Because I'll do it. Then some fun music kicks in and we cut to the crew celebrating a successful trip because, yes, of course, Epps was able to mend the boat and they got it back safely.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you know what this energy is giving me right now?
What?
Is Alien. You have a crew. Ooh. It's like the last name. Like, yes. I don't know. It's just the way they're interacting with each other. And then you have like Epps.
Badass
woman. Yes. Who's going to be like, I got this. Yeah.
Wait, you're so right. I never like made that connection. But you saying that, you can. Obviously, Alien is Alien. But you can feel that vibe. That is very much the energy of these people.
Okay.
Here's to the best damn salvage crew in the business, Murphy says as he dumps an envelope of cash onto the table. They're sharing some drinks at the bar, feeling good, as they should, when some guy comes over to them and introduces himself as Jack Ferryman. He would like to have a word alone with Murphy, but Murph says that he can say whatever he needs to in front of his crew.
Amazing.
Jack's like, okay, fine. He goes on to explain that he flies the Arctic Weather Control patrol flights in the area, and over the past month, he's caught some strange images out over the Bering Strait. At first, the crew makes fun of him for capturing the image of a boat on the ocean. They're like, good job. You saw a boat on ocean. Wow. But he's like, no, I've seen it 3 times now, and I haven't been able to contact the ship via radio. Murphy asks why he didn't just alert the Coast Guard, but Jack says that he did. It's international waters, so all they did was take note of it, and that's it. Murph's like, okay, fine. Say we are interested in going and salvaging this ship. What are you looking for? What's in it for you? Jack says he wants a 20% finder's fee. So Murph's like, all right, give me a second. Let me speak to my crew. The group is a little skeptical. This guy could definitely be lying. He could be crazy. This whole thing feels a little strange. But Murph says he's seen a lot of strange things in the Strait, in the Bering Strait specifically, so it could be something. Greer isn't sure he wants to take part. They've been out to sea for 6 months, and he really wants to get back home to his fiance. And the others seem to share a very similar sentiment. But Murphy reminds them, in our business, the only plan is there is no plan. Which I feel like it's kind of us sometimes.
Yeah.
We're just like, whatever happens.
We can do it. Yeah. We got this. Yeah.
Everyone kind of rolls their eyes because apparently this is something that Murphy says a lot. And they're sick of hearing it. Murphy doesn't even push it. He's like, we don't have to do it. You know, we'll give it to someone else. But Munder wants to know, like, how much do you think this ship might be worth? Murphy says it could be anywhere from nothing to millions. Hard to say. But he'd be willing to do an even split with them all, which I guess is not normal. I guess usually he takes a larger cut being the captain.
Sure.
So now he's like, but if we do this, we'll evenly split it. The chance for a good payday is pretty high, and the ship is only about a week out of their way. So they agree. Fine. Let's do it.
The alien plot continues.
That's so true. Wait a second.
Fine. We'll go and we'll investigate this planet, this boat for extra money and then be on our way. Yeah.
I didn't make any of these connections. And I'm like, wait a second. Is this just once alien?
Once you think about it, that's so funny.
Oh, that's so good. All right. So Murphy calls Jack back over and he's like, all right, fine. We're going to do it, but 10%. Instead of 20%. Jack thinks that he's being taken advantage of, so he won't accept that offer unless they let him come aboard. And Murph doesn't want that at all. But Jack insists he needs some kind of insurance on this. So 10%, and Jack comes along, it is. So back out they head toward the ship. Oh, and they also have another crew member who's been very, like, irrelevant up till now, and his name is Santos. He works down in the engine room. That's like his job on the ship. But right now, everyone is just kind of hanging out, reading books, watching TV, drinking coffee, cutting each other's hair. And Santos is driving the boat by himself, jamming out to some very intense, like, heavy metal music as the rain is pouring down. Jack's getting a little seasick. He's not used to this, and he's not having the best time. They kind of make fun of him for it.
Oh, that would be me. For sure.
They're like, you wanted to come along, and now you can't even handle it.
Yeah.
Suddenly, Santos's voice comes over the walkie-talkie. Santos to Murphy, come in. Murphy picks up and responds. Santos tells him that he needs to come up here right now and see what he's seeing. So he does. Santos is trying to explain to Murphy that something was just on the radar, but it's gone now. He thinks there's got to be something wrong with the machine. Murphy's just kind of like, yeah, okay, Murphy, whatever you say. There's nothing there. I don't know what you thought you saw. Santos looks back at the radar again, and it reappears. Something the size and shape of a ship can be seen, and this time, Murphy sees it too. He calls to Dodge and tells him to go get on the bow light right now. They get the lights going, and Epps comes to see what's going on as Murphy is using the radio to try and get in touch with the people on board this clearly very large ship that is out in the ocean in front of them. Again, it's still storming real bad, so they can't see anything. It's super dark out there. No one is coming through on the radio, and now the ship has disappeared on the radar again. They continue to move forward, and suddenly Santos is forced to break the boat as quickly as he can. The large steel side of a ship is just in front of them now. Santos does his best to slow the boat, but it's not quite enough. The tugboat slams into the side of the ship, sending them all flying. Now, luckily, they have tires all around their tugboat, so, like, the impact is not as detrimental as it could have been. But hey, we found it. We found the ship. So the crew's all like, oh my God, an ocean liner. Where did this come from? This is crazy. They circle the ship in their tugboat and discover that the ship is the Antonio Graza, a ship that Murphy knows all about. He calls through the radio to see if anyone's on board, but of course, he gets no answer. Murph fills in the crew. This is a ship that was reported missing May 21st, 1962. Just poof, gone. No one had found her since, until now. Due to the laws of the sea, the ship is now theirs, and they're excited to jump on board, because I guess anything found in international waters is like finders keepers kind of vibes. Mm-hmm. So they're like, oh my God, this is ours. They all jump on board. Greer sends Murph, Epps, Munder, and Dodge up to the ship in the crane, and Jack's disappointed that he's not allowed up yet, but they're like, it's for your safety. Like, we don't know. We're the experts. You stay here. It's dark. It's rainy. The ship is old, so exploring it is a little rough. The conditions aren't great. They discover that all the lifeboats and life preservers are gone. Strange, considering no survivors ever turned up from the ship. As the crew travels farther into the ship, their radio signal gets a bit wonky, and Greer can no longer get in touch with them. That's kind of the vibe throughout the whole movie, is the walkies are a little strange in here. So weird. The interior of the ship is pretty interesting. It's very fancy, and it's been left to rot for 50 years. So I hate to say it, but when you picture like the Titanic stuff, it kind of has that similar vibe of like all that rot on the really fancy, pretty stuff. It's I don't mean to say it looks cool, but it does kind of look
done.
Cool. Yeah. The crew can also see the remains of what looks like it was a very big party. Lots of champagne bottles cover the floor.
You don't say.
Don't say. Big party, big fun final act at that party.
Yeah. That's so weird about the life vests are missing.
Yeah, the life vests, the lifeboats, everything's gone.
That's so weird.
It is weird. Very strange. Okay. They examine an old clock and get jump scared as it chimes. And we pan over to a table where that block letter contraption sits and the letters begin to shift on their own.
Ooh.
What used to say, I am so bored, becomes welcome aboard.
That's like worse than help me.
Yeah, right?
Do you know what I mean? Right? Help me is like the classic. Welcome aboard. I hate welcome aboard.
Yeah. I should say that they don't see that. Only we see that.
Okay.
So the crew's wandering down another hallway when Munder suddenly falls through the floor. Oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
He dangles between where they stand and there's like a grand entryway below. His crewmates jump into action and Epps grabs him. In doing so, she kind of slips through like she's holding him and someone else has got her feet. But she's holding on to Munder for dear life. And she looks to the side and sees a little girl standing on a staircase in a blue dress.
Oh, dear.
The girl looks right back at Epps. And yes, this is the girl that we saw in the opening scene.
Yes.
Epps locks back in on Munder. And when she glances back, the girl's gone. So the crew's able to pull Munder back up. He's all good, but Epps is a little scared, a little uncomfortable given what she just saw, but she doesn't mention it to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't blame her for, because they're just going to be like, you're insane. What do you mean you saw a little girl?
Yeah.
You think you'd say something?
I would.
Yeah?
But I would approach it like, I don't know if I'm seeing things, but I think I just saw a little girl. Like, you know, you got to right. approach it like, it could have just been a weird trick of the eye.
Uh-huh.
But I'd let you know.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I would let you know. I guess it kind of depends on who it is.
Yeah, but they seem close. They seem like a really close group.
She does call them her family on the ship before this. So you're right. Yeah.
Interesting.
A little later on, they discover all the ship's controls. And yes, of course, everything's broken. The gas is run empty. And Dodge is going through some logs on the counter when he finds a digital watch. Which is actually really interesting because they didn't have digital watches back in 1962. Uh-huh. So this means that people have been aboard this ship since then.
Oh, no.
Which is fine. What?
Okay. What if people, like victims of the ghost ship, that they're the ones who escaped with the life vests and the boats and stuff?
True. True.
But there's none left anymore. So I think we're just going to die.
There are none left. That's really unfortunate for us.
Yeah.
That is really... Yeah. I mean, we got our tugboat, at least.
This is true.
So... That's good.
I just don't, I feel like something's going to happen to it. But for now, this is true and this is fine.
Yeah, we're good. We're good.
Yeah.
Murph's like, all right, let's call it a night. Let's get a few hours of sleep on the tugboat. And in the morning, we can start towing the ship back to shore. When they get back, Jack is, of course, very excited to hear about what they found. He wants to know if there's any sign as to what happened here. Murph says they're still not sure, and he goes on to tell the story of another ship called the Mary Celeste. This ship was back from Civil War times, and it had been on its way to London. 2 months after its departure, it was discovered completely abandoned, but still chugging along. It had managed to navigate all this way without crashing.
Whoa.
What do you make of that? Murph asks. A ghost ship, Jake responds. I had to put that in there because it's the title, guys. It's not an important line of dialogue, but it sure is the title of the film. So,
love it.
Dodge laughs this off, calling it all bullshit. And Murphy's, he's pretty serious, though. He's like, I've seen more than you out on the ocean. It's very important to him. Epps stands alone along the rail of the tugboat, thinking about the girl she saw earlier when Jack comes out to offer her a jacket and a cigarette. She thanks him, and then Jack asks if she's okay. He can tell she's been off since she got back. I think I saw something I couldn't possibly have seen, she replies. Jack presses her to tell him what she saw, and eventually she gives in and tells him that she thinks she saw a little girl. He tries to relate, saying that sometimes when he'd be flying for hours on end, he'd think he saw things too. He definitely doesn't think she saw anything, but he's respectful about it, being like, yeah, sometimes.
Right.
We think we see things. It's fine.
Very valid. Probably the typical response to that.
Exactly. That's probably how I'd reply to. Like, oh, yeah, it's okay. Sometimes we see things.
Yeah.
The next morning, the crew goes out in their scuba gear to investigate the outside of the ship, and they do discover a breach in the hull.
Mm-hmm.
Given other factors, they think she'd been hit probably about a week ago. Murphy explains that the biggest issue for them right now is the Rocky Islands 60 miles to the west of where they currently are. Slowly but surely, that is where the ship is being pushed by the current. It's caught in a current that's swirling it by the islands, and the last time it went by, it hit the rocks, and that's what caused the breach. But if it hits again, it's over for the Antonio Graza. So they have what they think will be about 3 days to patch the breach, pump out the water, jerry-rig some stuff, and start towing this baby away. They're definitely going to be cutting it close with all the work they need to do, and the fact that Santos needs to fix some stuff on their own boat as well. But what do they have to lose? They might as well give it a shot. Greer says he's going to call this in and report what they're doing, but Murph says he shouldn't. They don't want any unexpected guests. So, yeah, not going to call this into the Coast Guard.
Don't love that.
No, I don't love it either.
I'd fight for us to follow the rules, but I probably wouldn't fight too hard
because
he's the guy in charge.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
Kind of what Murph says goes.
Yeah.
And that is the end of Act One.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow. I just looked at the time and like it's not – we're a little early, but it's nothing crazy. That felt so quick.
I feel like this script is going smoother right now than I expected it to.
Oh, good.
So yeah, I'm like,
it's a lot. Well, I understand why this is a hard one to write with how many people we're trying to establish here.
And we're going to get – I will tell you after we do the questions why it gets much more complicated. And
oh, dear.
But I think I did it well.
Yes.
But
everything has been easy to follow so far.
Love to hear it. So I do have three questions for you. And you already know what question 1A is.
Yeah.
How unlikely are you to go on a cruise?
Should I take river cruise into account? Because the same thing can happen, do you think? Okay. I'll go 27.
Oh.
Because the 27% is the possibility of me ending up on... Because river cruises are expensive.
Wait, so are you saying you would be...
Wait,
73?
Did I do it backwards?
Yeah.
Oh.
Because I went 82. So I was like.
Yes. I don't know why lately I take every question you give me and it's the opposite in my mind.
It's, well, because we have to word them so dumb because of.
I know, but usually, but something about like the last couple episodes even, my brain has been like, wait, what? High or low? I like can't process.
No, I get you.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. 73.
Okay.
I think I might go on a river cruise, and that's where that the 27% lies.
Sure.
But other than that, no, no.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty much with you. I went 82 because, like,
yeah.
I don't know. If I, like, got an invite on a Disney cruise, I feel like I would have a really hard time saying no.
Oh, really? That's where the scariest ones are. I would say no.
I just, like, love Disney.
I know. And that's
just
valid.
It's hard for me to say no to things in general. So if you, like, invited me somewhere like that, I'd really have a hard time. But I would never seek out a cruise on my own. Ever.
Right. Ever. Right.
Not.
Yeah. My thing. River cruise. I'm thinking river cruise. If that's, like, my family does it, I'd go with my family. If, like, my family was doing just a regular cruise, I would say I wouldn't go.
Yeah. That's fair.
Yeah. It freaked me out.
It is freaky.
Yeah.
How unlikely are you to be part of a salvage crew on the ocean?
I'm going to go zero. I can go
You're gonna
zero.
You're going to go 100.
No. Dang it! Why?
Why? That was so funny.
And I'm going to do it for the third question, too. And I know I am. No, 100. 100.
100. Okay. I did 89. I'm 100%
certain.
Valid. I went 89 because I'm not going to lie. That sounds super fun.
No.
Why?
You can't.
You'll
die.
Oh. Okay. Oh my god, I'm supposed to start sharing my location with you and my other two friends. I got yelled at over the weekend.
Oh my god. Wait, I'm shocked that guys, Caitlin has done something recently. This is not shared.
I can share like, it even right on stream. Now. Oh,
please do tell what you've done recently. And I actually am mad at myself for not asking for your location. After hearing about this.
Real quick, I went on a date last week and I didn't tell anyone I was going on a date. And then, because I was just like, I don't know, I don't think before I do things. And then after the date, like, he had a boat and he was like, do you want to go see my boat? And I was like, yeah, that sounds fun. And so I got on a dinghy and like we went out to the boat, and on the way out to the boat, I was like, oh my God, he could kill me right now.
This is not first date behavior.
No, I probably shouldn't have done that, but I lived. No. And it was fine. But I think this is really, I'd survive, like, in a nutshell.
No, Cassie we should be sharing locations.
I would not.
So that if I see you in the middle of the ocean one day, I go, okay, I'm going to give her a text and see what's happening.
Can you imagine if we were sharing location and you just look, it's me in the ocean, you're like, it's 11 p.m.
Time to text her again. She's in the ocean again.
There she is.
Time to make sure she's alive again.
Oh, man. That would... I have a lot of moments like that where I'm like halfway through something go, wow, I should not be doing this.
Which is so crazy to me, given what you do and what we talk about every week.
My friend had a good point and I told her this past week and she's like, I think your anxiety meds are working a little too well. Oh. I was like,
You know what? I'm happy for you that they're working that way, that they're working. Like,
yeah,
because you're fine. You're living. Mm-hmm. You have experiences under your belt. Mm-hmm. And you also can't let someone like me drag you down from those. Yeah. You know,
don't drag
because
me
I'm too scared
for not getting on a stranger's boat at 11 p.m.
But if a man ever drags you down into the ocean,
you know,
I hope you think of me.
I will. I'll be thinking of you the whole way down. Be like, Cassie was right.
How romantic.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. I'll remember that. We'll do that.
Perfect. Sorry, that was a side tangent. Our final question for this act. Would you deny Jack's proposal to check out this new ship?
Okay, so I'm more like working. I'm like in the crew now, you know?
Yeah, now you have to be. This is what I do. I'm so sorry, but you have to be in the crew.
Okay. Wait, because I want to give a high number, but I think that's not what I'm supposed to do. Because I would agree, so it's lower.
It's low. Yeah. I was like, there's no way she does this backwards.
Okay, I would probably be like a 19 here.
I did 9, so yeah.
Yeah. Like, why? Yeah. I might be a baby and just stay on the tugboat and be like, I'm spooked. But... It's what we do,
it's what
I guess.
We do, and like, yes, we've been out for 6 months, but this is going to be an extra week, and it could be a huge payday.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Sure, why not? Like, we don't expect anything super creepy to happen either. So,
Yeah.
Just give it a shot. What could possibly go wrong?
Right. Mm-hmm. Isn't that the question? Okay, well, my Act 1 average comes out to a 64%.
Mine was a 60, so
okay.
Nice to see you in the 60s.
Matchy.
Love that for us.
As always, almost.
Wait, is that average? So if we were averaging by act, it would be a 62, and the ship went missing in 1962. So that's really interesting.
So we're haunted.
We're haunted, everyone. Look out. All right, Act 2. So everybody is going on to the ship now to start their repairs. And they are going... All right, here we go. So this is where things get funky.
And you shouldn't have... Like, even if you did learn what all these things are, as if I would know what you were talking about.
Oh, well, okay, you know? True. That.
Yeah.
But also this is about to get funky.
As in supernatural.
No. Let me just keep talking before I'm keep scared. Saying stupid things out of my mouth.
No.
So... The crew is going to split up, and it's going to go like this.
Okay.
Murphy is going to be... What is in my throat? Okay.
Sorry. Can we please keep that in?
Please. Absolutely. Why not? I keep trying to talk, throat keeps freaking out on me.
I know. I have days like that.
I'm like, hello? Just do what you need to do. Murphy is going to be with Greer. Dodge is going to be with Munder, of course, because they're always together. And Epps is going to go with Jack. Santos.
Okay, I'm sensing romance. Well, that could just be me projecting and romance? Wanting it. Epps and Jack.
It feels like it, I will say, in that outdoor scene when he offers the jacket.
Yeah.
Like there's a little something there.
Okay.
And Santos, he's going to stay back and work on the tugboat. He's not super confident everything's going to go well, but he's going to do his thing. So this is where I had to move the movie around more than I ever have in my life.
Ooh.
Because this movie, the way it's edited, is very like, what are they doing? What are they doing? What are they doing? And go back to them. So I just took each group's thing and did it all at once instead of jumping back and forth.
Yes. Okay.
It was just too quick. It'd be like one little thing and then over here and then over. And I was like, it works in the movie, but it would not work for this. So I'm going to start out with what's going on with Dodge and Munder. They head to the main engine room, which they discover is unfortunately completely flooded. So in order to fix the tear in there, they're going to have to dive. They try to reach the crew over the radio, but all they get is static and also maybe some music. They think that Epps is fucking with them just for funsies. Mm. And that's it with Dodge and Munder. Now, Greer and Murphy, they stumble upon the captain's quarters. And Murphy gets a little weird about it just through gestures. There's no dialogue. But we can tell that he's like, hey, I'm a captain. I'm going to go in there, but you probably shouldn't come because you're not a captain.
Oh.
It's not like he does it in a nasty way. It seems like he's just like such an ocean guy and he believes in the rules of the ocean. And like, this is the captain's quarters. I'm going to go in there.
Sure.
Okay, so Murph goes into the captain's quarters. Inside, he just finds an array of decor, a captain's hat, logs, and also a blade in the sink surrounded by bloodstains, which is super cute. Oh. Yeah, that's fun.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. He also discovers a glass of whiskey sitting next to an open bottle.
Classic.
Mm-hmm. That's so captain. So captain.
So captain. I don't know why. I know. But it is.
It really is. Yeah. He picks up the glass and he goes to take a sip of it. But But as he does, he looks up into the mirror in front of him, and instead of his own reflection, he sees that of the captain from 1962. Now Murphy jumps back and he drops the glass on the floor and the captain is gone. Meanwhile, Greer discovers a scary empty elevator shaft.
Oh, of
probably
course.
Stay away from that. I don't know. That's weird. He continues to wander the ship alone when he starts to hear the sound of a woman's voice. She's singing. It sounds very echoey and distant.
Mm.
So he follows the sound until he comes upon the site of the party from 1962. Greer steps onto the stage and plays a few notes on the out-of-tune piano before realizing the ashtray that sits on its surface has a fresh cigarette, like still smoking, inside of it.
Mm-hmm.
He finds it weird at first, but then figures it must have just been Epps because the cigarette has a little lipstick on it. And he's like, she doesn't wear lipstick, but she must have started because, you know, where else could the cigarette have come from?
Okay.
He pans his flashlight around, landing on a poster featuring Francesca, the singer from the opening scene. Nice tits, he says.
Okay.
We're like, okay. Greer starts to head out of the room, and when we pan back, we can see that Francesca is sat in a corner smoking a cigarette, just watching him, like in her full red singer outfit.
Okay. Are they just like full-on people, or do they have effects on them?
Full-on people.
Okay, cool.
At most of the time, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
So then, what's up with Epps and Jack? So they find themselves in the pool room, where Epps discovers something unsettling. The empty pool is full of bullet casings, and there are bullet holes in the pool walls. Epps climbs the ladder to get out of the pool, but when she looks up, the little girl stands just in front of her. In shock, Epps lets go of the ladder and falls onto her back in the pool.
Mm-hmm.
When she sits up, a small drop of blood remains on the floor beneath her head, but it slowly pools into one of the bullet holes in the ground, like not in a natural way. It like travels so it can go in a bullet hole. She looks up and calls for the little girl, who's nowhere to be seen. Jack suddenly shows up. Don't know where the hell he was, but he shows up and he asks if she's all right before helping her out of the pool. Some blood trickles out of a bullet hole in the wall as Epps fills Jack in on what she's found. Jack thinks, someone must have been using the pool for target practice at some point, you know.
Okay.
And Epps is like, yeah, that's the happy version.
Yeah, that, for sure.
Sure, right. As they leave the room, blood spills from all of the bullet holes in the pool, filling up the whole thing with blood. Peering beneath the surface, we can see dead bodies floating all around in there. So we're very much at the supernatural. It's not supposed to make sense. It's just like, oh, and now the pool's got blood in it, and there's dead bodies floating in it, and it's supernatural and la-da-da.
Yep.
As they walk on, they discover a large door that Epps says is going to lead them where they need to go. She says this room might be flooded, so she's like, Jack, just, you know, stand by in case I need your help to reclose this door. Epps opens the door, and water immediately pushes her and Jack back.
Mm.
But it's not just water that comes flowing in. There are dozens of dead bodies in the water, too.
They're seeing this, right?
Yes, they are seeing it. There are just dead bodies.
Okay. Yes. Okay.
Lots of them. Super fun. Naturally, Jack and Epps are like freaking out and trying to reach the others on the radio. And interestingly, Epps thinks these bodies have been here for a month at most.
Oh, yeah. Weird.
She wants to call the Coast Guard and just get the hell out of here. She's like, I've had enough. Let's get out. So they dart back to the door they came through, but it's closed and also locked. So they have to find another way out. Well, they do find another way very quickly. And they open up this door, they go in, and they come upon some crates full of golden bars. Just like full solid gold bars. Like a lot.
I always wanted to eat one of those.
Okay.
But like it be edible.
There's no chocolate.
I know. I don't really want it to be chocolate. I just want it to be like its own thing that you can eat. Okay. we can move on.
What does it taste like though?
Like gold.
Oh.
I don't know how to explain it. Like, you're like, oh, I get it now.
Yes.
No, like, I want it to just kind of taste like gold. But,
crunchy? Is it soft? Is it?
I think it's extremely dense and kind of hard to chew. But you can, it's as dense as it can go. But you can still chew it instead of having to suck on it. Kind of like eating drywall, but like if drywall was like harder.
Perfect. I'm glad that this is
like, I want to eat concrete. I have the same thing where it's like, oh, like I wish I could just eat like a cinder block.
I've never once in my life been like, oh my God, that cinder block though. It looks good. That shit looks so good. This is not where I thought this conversation was going to go. I was like, oh my God, there's gold bars. You're like, oh, I want to eat one.
Yeah,
that's probably how most people felt when they saw.
I think so, yeah. I think that's what the movie wants you to think.
Yeah, they're like, oh, tasty. We're not going to run out of food. Like, kind of ice. Like, they're like, oh, yes.
Yeah, we're safe. We're safe
exactly.
now.
Exactly. Well, they see this gold and Epps is like, okay, damn, we need to find Murphy. Like, we got to fill in Murphy. Yeah. And she tries to use the radio again, but all that comes through is a voice whispering the name Maureen over and over. And Jack's like, who's Maureen? That's my first name, Epps responds.
Oh.
The voice continues. It's cold. Jack's like, where is it cold? And Epps goes, the galley, which I guess is like where they prepare the food. I didn't know that, but. And as they,
right near the gold.
Well, yeah. Well.
What a coincidence.
Wow. That, you might be onto something here. So they open the double doors in front of them, and the galley is indeed right there.
Wow.
And it has. Sorry. Put some ketchup on that. There's a walk-in freezer in there.
Okay.
And so Epps is like, ooh, like, let me go look in there. And Jack's like, oh, maybe don't do it. Maybe don't do it. Well, inside the walk-in freezer, there are multiple large masses covered in sheets hanging from the ceiling.
Kind
of like, you know, how it is in a walk-in freezer. And as Epps walks by one, we can clearly see a head turn and, like, follow her. She takes another step and jump scare. Two bodies jump out, covered in sheets, screaming at her.
Oh.
Epps races for the exit, and as she makes it back into the galley with Jack, Dodge and Munder pull off the sheets, revealing themselves super proud of their very successful prank. Epps is not amused. She's like, oh, you want to hear something funny? Well, we just found a bunch of dead guys.
I have a prank for you. Yeah.
Yeah. Floating in the laundry room.
Why don't you go hang out over there? Woo-hoo. Actually, I think I'd probably lock them in with the dead bodies after that. Just for like 30 seconds.
Yeah. Just be like, see? Ha 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 ha. Hilarious. Yeah.
But this is good because where did they come from? Let's get out of here.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Right. So she also pulls out the gold bar and is like, we also found this in the cargo hold. And they stop laughing immediately. They're like, oh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, everyone's going to get back together now. Yay! So let's check out this gold. They pull apart the crates, discovering well over 100 gold bars. Murphy estimates that this gold is worth somewhere between $200 and $300 million.
That's crazy. I was going to guess it would be like a 2 mil. Then you added on the 100.
Right. Like, I was very shocked. I did not think it could be worth this much.
Yeah.
I don't really know how much gold is worth when it comes in. I guess it's a lot.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. And now I'm thinking of like, is that even created anymore? Why would people make bars of gold these days?
I don't know.
Actually. I wonder if it's like used as actual new currency for any reason ever. Probably not.
I would doubt it. But I also am like, yeah, I don't know. I have no idea.
I don't know what really rich people would be doing.
So true.
Yeah.
So everybody's super hype. They're going to be rich. This is so exciting. And Greer's the one who's a little skeptical, though. He's like, there's no way someone would just let this much gold float away. Like, it's got to be insured or something. And Dodge takes a closer look at the gold and realizes that all of the markings have been shaven down. So someone didn't want this gold to be traceable, aka it is likely stolen. They wonder if this has something to do with why the ship disappeared in 1962. Though that doesn't explain all the bodies that Epps just found. Those were very fresh. Greer thinks the ship is just, quote, fucked up. He even shares how he heard a woman's voice singing earlier, like she was coming on to him, and the whole group laughs at him, like, bro.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, they're kind of all in agreement that they do want to get off this boat. So they decide what they're going to do is just leave the ship behind and take the gold with them. That's more than enough for them. Like, they're going to be millionaires. Let's just get out of here with the gold. The crew gets the tugboat prepped while Murphy goes in to retrieve the gold. As Epps loads some things onto the deck, she hears the voice of a little girl scream, stop, stop. She looks up to see that the girl in the dress is screaming to her from the ship. You don't know what you're doing, she says. Greer turns the key on the boat as Santos glances over at her propane tank in the engine room, and he smells a little something funny. Don't start the boat. He'll... The girl is interrupted by a figure that sweeps by and tackles her to the ground. Oh. Greer presses one more button and boom, the engine room explodes. Santos catches on fire before flinging himself overboard. Everybody is in a full-blown panic. Suddenly, another explosion. This one tears a hole right in the middle of the boat. and sends Epps flying. She's okay, but she's instantly worried about her fellow crewmates. Mm-hmm. She rushes back toward the boat where she sees Jack saving an unconscious Munder, bringing him back to the ship. She then finds Greer, who's out of it, so she shakes him awake. She screams for Santos, but he's nowhere to be found. We're going to get a little time jump where everyone minus Santos is now back aboard the Antonio Graza trying to figure out what just happened. Epps tends to some cuts on Greer's face. I don't know what happened, he says. The engine room just blew. I should mention this. I didn't. We see the propane tank open on its own and like let gas out.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So like it was like a supernatural like, ooh. Yep. Dodge turns on Jack, blaming him for what's happened. But of course, Jack is like, I didn't know what we were going to find here. I don't know what's happening. But I think Dodge is really just like looking for someone to blame for Santos's death. And Jack was the one who brought them here.
Mm-hmm.
Murphy's off sitting by himself. He's taking this really hard, given that he's the captain and he sees the crew as his own responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Epps decides to step up and hatch a plan, which is to fix the Antonio Graza and try to control her drift so she doesn't hit the rocks. They just need to survive here long enough to be rescued. Greer disagrees with this. He thinks they should build a raft and get off of this boat ASAP. He doesn't like the vibes here, and he thinks that they're all in danger. Dodge and Munder are not confident they can fix the ship, but they ultimately side with Epps, and this sends Greer into an absolute fit that leads to him punching Munder in the face before storming off. Okay, oh. Yeah, he just flips out.
I thought we were family, but
yeah,
I guess families do be doing that.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's true. Maybe not mine necessarily, but
thankfully not mine.
You never know.
Yeah.
So the team splits up again, and we have the same situation, so I split it up into individual sections here.
Okay.
So we're going to start again with Dodge and Munder. They take a little break and find some old canned goods on board. They debate whether or not this could still be edible. They open up a can of, like, multicolor beans, and they shoot rocks, paper, scissors to decide who's going to be the one to try it.
Oh, we don't have to.
I know. Munder loses.
Okay, well, I just said I wanted to eat concrete. So I judge that? But old food, ew.
Yeah, I know I'm with you on that, though. No, yeah. Thank you. Munder loses rock, paper, scissors, so he's up. He's got to try it. He scoops his spoon into the can and takes a pretty large yet hesitant bite.
Mm.
He pauses for a moment before saying, "That's all right." Dodge can't believe it. He rips the spoon back from Munder and takes his own bite. It's delicious.
Oh.
They joke about what they're going to do with all the money they're going to make as they eat up this can of beans. And then Munder's like, "Hey, Dodge, you got something on your lip there. Like, you might like wipe it off." And Dodge does, and then he brings another spoonful to his mouth. He looks down at the spoon and sees that it is not a spoonful of beans. It is a spoonful of maggots. Mm-hmm.
Like you started talking about the beans a little too much, and I was getting scared, and I was like, "Oh no, what's gonna happen?
Yeah.
Like what's gonna happen?" Mm-hmm. That's
yeah, it's just a can I can't. Of maggots, and that's what that's they've the been word. Eating, and it's
that's,
really gross.
That's, no, that ma- oh, I can't. We can move on.
Yeah, we're gonna move on. I
maggots
don't blame
are
you.
So gross.
So gross. So Greer, he makes his way back to the site of the party, and he's taking a seat at the piano, and he's drinking some champagne from the bottle. "I screwed up. I should have called it in," he says to himself. Which, yeah, probably.
Sure, but
Murphy, it's kind of Murphy's fault, but
yeah.
You know. He holds a picture of his fiance in his hands, and he swears to her. He's like, "I'm gonna make it back to you, baby." He gets up and starts to walk around when the room begins to move around him. So he's like in the middle of the room, and suddenly overturned furniture starts to right itself back up. There's dirt vanishing. Mm. The broken chandelier raises back into place, and we are now left with the room just as it was back in 1962.
Mm-hmm.
And this apparently was a huge feat for them to have done back then. They did something like I don't want to misquote it, but it was somewhere between 60 and 80 shots so that they could do individual pieces of things moving and then like put it all together kind of vibes.
Wow.
Which I respect a lot because I think that's definitely really cool. Greer stumbles around in fear, winding up in the center of the room, and he looks up, and then whoa, he's surrounded by men in tuxedos applauding him.
Oh, scariest part of the movie.
Yeah, right? Can you imagine? They all seem to be looking right at him, and up on the stage is Francesca. She smiles at him as well before walking across the floor toward him, but she's doing like a, more of like a little sensual strut towards him.
Mm-hmm.
She reaches out for him, grabbing him around the waist, and she leans in for a kiss, but Greer turns his head, so she kisses him on the cheek. "Do you want to dance with me?" she asks. That's really all it takes for Greer to give in, so he grabs her back. "Francesca," he says, "I know all of this isn't real, so I'm going to go with it, okay? Can't cheat on your fiance with a dead girl, right?" Right. Right, Greer. Okay.
Okay. Speaking of supernatural loopholes.
Yeah, I know. Literally.
Oh, yep. Okay. This is very relevant to what Caitlin and I have talked about today.
Yep.
Moving on.
Anyway. So she shakes her head no, like, oh, of course it doesn't count. And then they share this kiss, but it's a dead kiss. It's weird. Next thing we know, Francesca is walking away and unzipping her dress. And then she goes fully nude and silently like entices Greer to follow her. And mm-hmm. he does. And he starts to take off his own clothes. And then she stops and she waits for him. Mm-hmm. Greer approaches and tries to grab her waist, but his hands phase right through her body. And he leans forward. But oh no, Francesca had been standing just in front of one of the entrances to the long, empty elevator shaft.
Mm-hmm.
So there goes Greer, falling who knows how many stories down the shaft to his death.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, man. Was it like, do you think he was, that was really him choosing? Or do you think there's like this kind of spell?
No, they.
Like a supernatural spell situation.
They kind of paint him to be like a player.
He would do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The whole time. Because he keeps talking about his fiance, but I don't know. The way he was talking about the
about
voice
women.
Coming on to him. And then he was like, right. Nice tits. So yeah, I think
yeah.
that's it. And he was a little drunk. Because he was drinking champagne out the bottle.
Right.
But Francesca says to him, "Benvenuto, puto." Okay. What is it? Welcome, asshole.
Yeah.
So we then get this. Okay, I actually watched a video on this movie this morning. I've been doing that
cool.
a lot more lately because I'm like, I want to make sure I get everything before I bring it to you.
Yeah.
I wrote, we get a semi-unnecessary shot from behind her where she, like, whips around. And instead of, like, her young self, we see, like, an old rotted face instead. Mm-hmm. Apparently, this is completely stolen from The Shining, and I have only seen The Shining once, so
I
don't remember.
But yes, I know what scene this – I didn't think about it, but now that you say it, yeah.
Maybe if you saw it, you'd be like, oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Because I don't remember it, but it's a big complaint on this movie. They're like, wow, could you have ripped it off more? So
sure. It's a fine line between, like, paying homage
exactly.
and just, like, copying.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So now we can go check in with our friend Murphy. He went back to the captain's quarters and he finds himself that bottle of whiskey again.
Mm-hmm.
He takes a seat at the desk with the bottle and he puts his head down. The bottle then moves across the desk on its own. Murphy hears this and when he looks up, he sees the 1962 captain sitting right across from him in the other chair. The captain pours Murphy a drink and says to him, "Good evening, Captain. Welcome." And most of this dialogue is in Italian.
Mm-hmm.
Murphy stares at him dumbstruck for a moment when the captain says, "Oh, Santos, poor Santos." Some anger rises up in Murphy. "Santos was my goddamn responsibility," he responds. The captain hands a small folder over to Murphy, and Murphy opens it up. And inside there are photos of another ship, a sinking one at that. "The Lorelei," Murphy says. The captain tells him that that ship had been adrift, and they rescued her. Murphy is actually familiar with the story of the Lorelei, but had no idea that the Graza had been involved. Another picture shows that those crates of gold had been aboard the Lorelei and were transferred over to the Graza. The photos were also dated just 2 days before their ship had disappeared, which Murphy finds strange.
Mm-hmm.
There were no survivors above the Lorelei, Murphy says. The captain holds up a single finger before handing over one last photograph. Murphy's jaw falls at the sight. He darts out of the room and calls for Epps. But first he runs into the undead body of Santos now, who speaks to him. Where are you going, Murphy? He asks. Murphy tries to get away, but Santos appears every which way he turns. You know, it's no fun laying around at the bottom of the ocean, Santos says, all creepy-like. He tries to make Murphy feel guilty and tells him that it's his fault he's dead. You're coming along for the ride, he says, just before Murphy darts off for real this time.
Mm-hmm.
So now let's go and see the Epps storyline.
So, I'm nervous that you saved it for last.
You know. So Epps checks the manifesto or whatever it is and finds the name of the little girl. Her name is Katie Harwood, and she also discovers which deck she was on and that Katie was also all by herself aboard the ship.
Mm-mm.
Epps decides she wants to go and find the room that Katie had stayed in, so she wanders the B deck trying to find her room. Suddenly, the doors all slam in the hall one by one in quick succession. A childish hum can be heard as one of the doors slowly opens back up, inviting Epps inside. She slowly walks in and finds a room that certainly did belong to the little girl. There are sweet dresses, dolls, drawings, and Epps examines the drawings that are hung on the closet doors with a smile on her face. It's sweet, but then the doors slide open, revealing a rotted skeleton hanging from the ceiling via a rope just inside.
Mm-hmm. Oh, hanging. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yes. It is Katie's corpse.
And oh my God.
She is wearing a heart-shaped locket that catches Epps' attention, so she takes it off the body. And inside are photos of a man and a woman that Epps assumes, you know, her parents.
Uh-huh.
Please don't close it, a voice says from behind her. Katie is here in the room with her now, and she wants Epps to show her the photos because she hasn't seen her parents in years. She had been on her way to join them in New York when everything happened. Epps tries to hand the locket back over to Katie, but it phases right through her hand. You know, ghost.
Yes.
Oh, God, you really are a fucking ghost, Epps says. Katie explains some lore for us. She and all the other spirits are trapped here aboard the Antonio Graza, even the ones who, quote, aren't marked. And obviously Epps is like, what do you mean by marked? When the boat is full, Katie says, when he has all of the souls he needs and has filled his quota, we'll all be ferried to... She doesn't get the chance to finish her thought. Reddish-brown veins spread across the walls, the ceiling, and the floor of the room. Epps tries to ask Katie what's going on. I don't think Epps can see this happening, but Katie's just getting very hysterical. He doesn't want me to talk to you, but I'm not like the others. You must go at once. Leave the ship while you still can. She's screaming through her tears. Epps whips around to see what Katie is screaming about, but when she looks back, she's gone. Then Epps hears Murphy call her name, and she takes off looking for him. And this is the end of Act 2.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. I have a question for you, but
absolutely.
I don't know if it's going to be a question.
Sure.
I'll just go for it.
Go for it.
If you were like in any supernatural situation where you're like seeing and talking to a ghost and you have accepted that this is a ghost.
Yes.
And if they were just like, help set me free, I'm trapped. Would you help them and like think this was like a good ghost that is trapped, or would you not because they could be a lying demon?
Yeah, that's genuinely one of the more difficult questions I think to answer, because you have really no way of knowing in this moment like what the right thing to, because if you leave it could be the safer thing, but you're also going to wonder for the rest of your life. You're probably going to have regrets, you're probably going to have like guilt, but you could do it and it could kill you. So it's I have no idea.
Me either. Which, it's so 50-50 for me. Like in the moment, how I'm feeling, how I'm like, I don't know. That's hard.
That is. Yep. Absolutely. I have 5 questions for Act 2. All right. After experiencing weird happenings and dead bodies, do you insist that y'all need to get out of here?
Oh, yeah. I think if when I saw that girl. And like in the first act, I'd be like, we shouldn't, I'm going to go stay on the tugboat and you guys should come with me.
Okay.
So I'm going to go there's something, I am very drawn to like abandoned places though too. Like it's very cool. And like, this is also their job. So I'll go 81.
I knew you were going to say 81.
How?
Because I did 19. I just was like, she's going to say anyone. Weird. I knew you were going to say, I don't know why I knew that, but I did.
It's your curiosity.
Yeah. I mean, and I'd also be like, we're here. Let's just keep looking. I don't know. I don't think I'd make me leave. It should, but.
If you saw like a little girl, you would talk yourself out of like, oh, I just am seeing things because it's spooky.
Yes.
You know?
Right. Because this okay. is still before she like knows that it's yeah. like a ghost. So I'd be like, there's no way I saw that. There's just no way.
Yeah.
That I'm just in my head. Like, it's a spooky ship. I'm going to be like, I'm looking for spookiness. You know what I mean?
Okay.
I'm okay. going to put it on that, I think, at that point.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. You find the gold, right? Do you leave it behind when you leave the ship?
Oh, absolutely not.
Yeah, what the hell?
Yeah, I would not leave it behind. So I'm going to go like literally 5%.
I did 7. I don't know if, so
yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd take it all, but sure. I'd try to take as much as possible.
Yeah.
In terms of like what we can do mm-hmm. without being attacked or messed with or whatever.
Right.
I would try. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Do you side with Greer and decide to build a raft out of here as opposed to fixing the ship?
Sure. Well, the thing is, I can't fix a ship. So
I know that's a little tricky here.
That's what's hard. Wait, so I need to, should I?
I think I went with the assumption that we know what we're doing.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if I can fix this ship, I probably would try to fix the ship. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't. Try to go with the raft thing.
Sure.
I wouldn't be opposed to it either. I would probably want that to also be a second option. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go more middle of the road here.
Yeah.
And go like 55.
Okay. I went 34 thinking most yeah. likely I'm not going to go on that raft, but I could see a situation in which it like, sure. Maybe it's yes. a smarter thing, but for me, it's probably not the smarter decision just because I'm yeah. like picturing a raft.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I'm scared of the ocean. I don't want to be on a raft.
Yeah, no, I'm good.
So like you do that and we'll use that if we need to, but I'm going to be trying yeah. other things.
I think yeah. fixing the ship sounds like the smarter plan.
Yeah.
You are drunk and frustrated. How unlikely are you to be seduced by a ghost?
Listen, if I was single, mm-hmm. that's a different story.
That's true. I went with an, okay, I went as single, but you can go either way.
Okay, so I'm just gonna, since you went as single, I'll go as like, I'm in a relationship.
Yeah.
So yeah. I would say, how likely am I to be seduced by a ghost? I would say, I mean, is it the ghost of Frankenfurter? Okay, well, like we,
well,
you know?
Yeah.
So I'll give it like a 2, right?
Nope.
I'm not going to be. It's the opposite.
It's the opposite.
God damn it.
How
sorry.
Unlikely are
so
you to
sorry
be seduced?
To my boyfriend.
You're like, it's a 2, actually.
Okay, 98.
98 how, like, for you.
Yeah, yeah. Because that's, no.
Yeah.
I'm scared too. I'm like too scared.
No, that's fair.
I'm like too scared to be seduced as well.
Yeah. No, that's also very fair. I mean, yeah. I went 78.
Yeah.
Probably not. But also if I'm like drunk and just like. Depends yeah. on who the ghost is. She's yeah. like very pretty and like going out of her way to like really.
And warm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's really trying. So.
And they look normal. They don't look like ghosts.
Right.
They look solid and real like and real stuff. People. So.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then the last question for act 2. Do you avoid drinking the whiskey in the captain's quarters?
Yeah. Yeah. 100.
Really?
100. That's so I can't be just drinking shit that's been who knows. But okay, so was it closed? No, it was an open bottle.
The bottle was open.
It was open. There's probably algae in there. Like
is.
I'm not drinking that.
You're probably right.
What did you say?
I said 32.
Caitlin.
I'll have a little drinky.
That's the idea. I'm actually surprised by that because you're so when it comes to food and like old food and like contamination and shit.
Actually. I'm like, well, oh, alcohol? Yeah. Drink it up.
What's a little algae?
<That's fat. laughs> Damn.
Oh my God. That's funny.
Yeah. Oh well.
Okay. I went up a little.
Okay.
I went up to a 68.
That's
4% higher.
That's nice. I am yes. at 34.
Okay.
So
Because you're getting drunk and having sex with ghosts.
Exactly. I mean, what can I say? What can I say? Down for a good time. That's so
funny. Yeah. Might as well make the best time of it.
All right. Especially if we're in danger. Because then it's like, yeah, we're going to die anyway. It's fine.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Valid.
All right. Final act. What could possibly happen in this final act?
I think we might all die. I think this is the kind of movie where that might happen.
I could see that. Epps runs into a room and spots Murphy there. But we as the audience see the undead Santos run just behind Epps before she calls out to Murphy. Murphy, she yells. And we see some kind of weird distortion suddenly going on with Epps. It seems as though Santos had actually stepped inside of Epps' body. So when Murphy turns around, he just sees Santos.
Oh.
You all right, Murph? The Epps Santos being asks. Instead of the flashlight that Epps is holding, Murphy sees a knife. So he lunges forward and attacks Epps, thinking that she is Santos. Thus ensues a chaotic fight sequence where we see flashes of the real Epps fighting back and the undead Santos saying crazy, provocative things to make Murphy angry. Suddenly, out of nowhere, Jack appears and swings something at the back of Murphy's head, knocking him out and saving Epps. Jack barely had time to even process the situation, and now he's like, whoa, shit, Epps, like, are you good? Cut to Dodge and Munder being here now, and they drop this unconscious Murphy into an aquarium-like thing on the ship. It's like a big cylindrical glass tube. Because they don't trust him right now. They're like, why did he just attack Epps? That's weird. Yeah. Epps is actually defending him, saying that he was just drunk. Like, he really wouldn't do that on purpose, but Dodge and Munder are like, he did try to kill you.
Yeah, so, that's like, wild of her. I mean, I thought she was about, you were about to say that she was, like, defending him because I think the ship is messing with us. Mm-hmm. Like, something weird's going on here.
Yeah, right.
But he's just drunk is crazy.
Yeah, that's, like, a bad defense. Yeah. So, all right.
Oh.
Dodge, Munder, and Jack are going to go off and look for Greer. And then we get a time cut. The sun is coming up. It's lighter out now. And it sounds like maybe a storm is coming in. There's a little bit of thunder in the distance. And Ebbs watches over the unconscious Murphy when Jack, Munder, and Dodge walk back in. Any sign of him, she asks. They say they couldn't find him anywhere and are just assuming he's still pissed from the fight that they had earlier. Jack makes a comment in reference to something Munder and Dodge have been talking about. You think someone poisoned the passengers to get the gold? Don't you think that's a little extreme? Dodge finishes. Yeah, maybe, but if the shoe fits. They ask Epps what's up with the heart locket that she's wearing, and she says that it belonged to a little girl, one who had told her that they need to get off this boat. She's talking to you now? Jack asks, leaving Munder and Dodge confused and very out of the loop because they don't even know about the little girl. But anyway, we have to get back to the plan. We gotta fix the ship so we can get out of here. So then we go into this sort of like montage mode as we watch the team go underwater, blow some shit up, weld things, go, go, go. Yeah. And once everything's patched back up, they gotta pump the water out. So they set all of these like tubes up underwater and like there's this pump system that they do a whole thing with, and they start pumping out the water, and they think should be about 12 hours before the ship can pump all that water out.
12 hours
of pumping we're dead water out. Yeah, it's a little rough. Epps takes on the role of trying to control the ship's drift, try to keep them away from the rocks, and looking out toward the rocks, she can tell that the current is faster than she thought, so they've really got to get this all working as quick as possible, but the team thinks that they can do it. Now that things are pretty much set and it's time for the waiting game, Epps decides she's going to go off and look for Greer herself. She wanders the lower decks calling his name when she comes upon Katie again. Katie stands down at the end of a hallway looking very somber, so Epps approaches her. But Katie is standing just beside the elevator shaft, and when Epps pans her flashlight over toward it, she sees Greer's body laying dead at the bottom. Meanwhile, Dodge and Munder have been keeping watch over the pumps and, the second tube just got clogged up. The guys once again shoot rocks, paper, scissors to decide who has to go down under the water and fix it. And once again, Munder loses. Back with Epps, she looks sadly over Greer when Katie says, "Come with me. I want to show you something." Katie reaches out and touches Epps' shoulder and flash, 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 let's go back in time to that night back in 1962. This sequence is yet another very montage-styled thing, but it's very, it's funky. It's got upbeat music. The editing pace is very snappy, and it's a lot of that, like, it's giving action movie because it does, like, the speed up, slow down stuff a lot, you know?
Yes.
They do
yes.
a lot of that. Just picture that energy as we watch okay. this. It is the night of the party. The dance floor is as we remember it from the start. But what's happening in the kitchen? Some chefs pour rat poison into the food while others lay dead in pools of blood on the ground. Yeah. Crazy.
Yes. Okay.
She's like, oh, wait. Okay.
Yeah.
Food and drink are delivered to the party and some guests start throwing up off the side of the boat. That uh-huh. wire cuts across the dance floor and the bodies uh-huh. drop. Katie screams and runs through the ship where people are dropping from the poison and also just being killed by other people who look like they're employees of the ship, but they're all in like these light blue uniforms. Okay. A large pot full of guns is brought into the kitchen and the workers in blue each grab one. Everybody grabs a gun. Woohoo. In the pool room, yes, guests are being gunned down and falling into the pool dead. Katie is captured, and we just see her being brought into her room where we know that they hang her.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. The memories continue. The men in blue blow up the vault room and break inside where they find the gold. And, oh, snap, Francesca shows up. She's part of the operation. And one of the men walks up to her and gives her a smirk before turning around and spraying the rest of the men in blue with bullets. He turns back to Francesca, who shoots him in the head. It's just like people turning and turning and turning and turning on each other.
Yeah.
Now another man enters in a tux just behind her. She's expecting him. She tosses her gun aside and walks to him, and they share this very passionate kiss before the man backs away. A concerned look falls over Francesca's face, and a large hook swings in and catches her by the neck. And then she dangles there, dead, with the hook through her jaw.
Aww.
Yeah. The man grabs her hand and squeezes it hard. We hear a sizzling sound, and when he pulls his hand back, we can see that the woman has been branded with what looks like either like a hook or a devil's tail. It's got like a curvy with like mm-hmm. an arrow on the end, so I'm not sure what exactly it's supposed to be. And for the first time, we get a good look at the man's face, and dun dun dun, it's Jack. Oh.
Oh my God, I didn't see this.
No, I didn't either. I didn't
see this coming. This is good.
It is, right? Like, why does everyone hate it so much? It's super cheesy. Wait. But like,
well,
I love
that's
it.
The thing is, I really love like dramatics. Mm-hmm. I really love cheesy.
Oh, so, yes.
I mean, it's hard when like a movie, do you feel it taking itself too seriously? Is that why people hate it?
Maybe. It definitely isn't trying to be funny.
No, yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? I do think it is meant to be taken seriously.
It comes off a bit camp to me, but maybe it didn't mean to.
Well, I will have some fun information for you after that okay. I think is interesting, and I'm curious why we did what we did here. But
okay. I'm so sad for this twist. I didn't know. This is great.
So it's Jack exactly as he looks to us today. So mm-hmm. Epps, of course, her hands like shoots to her mouth. She's standing there in shock, and then like a realization hits her and she runs back to Murphy. I think she's mm-hmm. like picked up on the fact that like he never meant to hurt her. This was all Jack's mm-hmm. doing. So she's worried about him. And when she gets back to the aquarium tank, it is full of water and Murphy has drowned.
Aww.
And he's holding onto the photo that the captain had given to him. And it's the photo of Jack.
Ah, he knew.
He knew.
Yeah.
That he was the bad guy. So Epps tries to break the tank. She's just like so upset, but it's too late anyway. Murphy is yeah. gone. Munder is gone beneath the surface to unclog the second hose when Epps finds Dodge and tells him that Murphy is dead. We need to get off this ship, she says. She believes there's a reason that she, Dodge, and Munder are the ones left alive because he needs them to fix the ship before Epps can completely fill in Munder what's going on. So Jack walks in. He's unaware of the conversation that was just being had. And he's like, oh, I just saw Murphy. Like, what happened? He says. Epps plays along as though she doesn't know he's the villain here. She mm-hmm. tells Jack, stay with Dodge. Mind you, Dodge is looking at her wide-eyed because he's like, what were you just saying? Like, what's going on? But she keeps being like, just like, play along with me here.
Yeah.
So she's like, I'm going to go check on Munder to make sure that the welds are holding. I will be right back. The two of you stay here. Do not let either one of each other out of your sight.
Mm-hmm.
And then she hands a very scared and confused Dodge her gun and is like, don't leave. So cut to Mundur beneath the water checking on stuff when a piece of machinery just turns on and sucks him in and essentially just grinds him to nothing. And it's very quick and he's dead.
They just needed him dead. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so crossing you off.
He just got sucked into machinery, basically.
Wow.
And grinded up. So Epps gets down there to the pumps and she's calling for Mundur. But when she looks down, she can see that the water in one of the tubes has turned a nice bright red.
Mm-hmm.
Dodge and Jack have managed to right the ship so it doesn't hit the rocks. And Jack's like, oh, that's it then. We've made it. For now, Dodge responds. Jack says he's going to go find Epps, but Dodge fights him on it. She told them to wait here. Jack's face gets all dark and he's like, mm-hmm. You disgust me. And Dodge is like, huh? What? What did you say? And Jack just sort of starts like railing into him out of nowhere, calling him a pathetic excuse for a man, basically because he's following Epps's orders.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yikes.
Yeah. Jack goes to storm out of the room again, but Dodge pushes him back and cocks the gun. Who the hell are you? He asks. Jack's response? Don't worry about who I am. Question is, who are you? I've seen the way you look at her. You worship her, yet you never had the balls to tell her because you're a weak, cowardly child. Okay.
Wow. I actually didn't pick up on that either. He was into her?
I didn't pick up on it either. I didn't see it.
Weird. I see where we're falling apart a little.
Yeah. I don't know where that was coming from.
Or maybe Jack's just projecting.
Well, that too.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't know if he's making this up to like fuck with them because I didn't see the romantic
aspects. Yeah. Interesting.
I don't know. Or he could just be like, because I don't think he likes that they respect her. I don't know if it's a little bit of sexism here as well.
Yeah. It has to be. Oh, it definitely. Yeah.
Maybe it's just like he sees them like obeying her orders as like.
And so he assumes you must be into her. That's the only reason that. Oh, wow.
Yeah. I think that's kind of what's happening. I'm not sure though.
Yeah.
Jack tries to leave the room again, but Dodge has no intention of letting him by. You live for her. Are you willing to die for her? Jack asks as he lunges at Dodge, who fires the gun. And Jack goes flying back and hits the ground, his chest like ripped open. Dodge leans over him and sees no signs of life. But of course, once Dodge walks away, Jack's eyes shoot open.
Oh, man.
Because he is a ghost, so.
Yeah, I'm surprised that even really affected him.
Right. I think he just was able to like pretend. And it was just like that. He went along with
it. Yeah, yeah.
Epps is setting up some C4 in another room when Dodge walks in and tells her that he shot Jack and that he's dead. And Epps is like, oh, don't be so sure about that.
Yeah.
Don't know. Dodge is like, so what are you doing? What's with the C4? And Epps says that she's going to sink the ship. Mm-hmm. It's taken its last victim. She just wants it to be gone. And Dodge is concerned because that's going to kill them. But Epps is like, well, we have to take our chance here. Like, this is my only plan. Dodge brings up the gold, and Epps is like, oh, no, we're not getting the gold off this boat. People have tried, and no one has ever succeeded.
Right.
Epps continues to set up the C4, but Dodge tries to stop her. That gold could give us everything we ever wanted, he says. We could have our own boat, the two of us. We could have a life together.
Oh.
Epps is like, what the hell are you talking about? No, we have to get out of here now. Well, I can't let you do that. Dodge says as he steps toward Epps.
Oh.
Epps steps back and clicks a switch on the device she's holding. It's like a two-step system with the trigger for the C4. So she's like, step one. Dodge flips out. He is like, okay, bitch, you win. Just do it. Go ahead and do it. And Epps calmly stares him down before asking him, Dodge, why haven't you asked me where Mundur is? Dodge laughs hysterically as he morphs back into Jack.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
You're not going to pull that trigger, Jack says to Epps. Epps stands firm. Jack tells us that he killed Dodge, so Dodge is dead.
What?
We didn't see it because they wanted that little reveal right there. So I don't even know what he did.
Okay.
R.I.P. Dodge.
Oh.
And he also guesses that Katie is the one who must have told Epps everything. Souls without sin cannot be marked, so he has no control over Katie. He admits to what Katie had told us. He's trying to collect souls, and when he reaches his quota, he sends the boatload home. This is a job he was given after a lifetime of sin, and he needs to complete it successfully or management won't be happy. So this whole thing, in the video I watched today about this, it's very vague. It's just like, ooh,
yeah.
creepy demon guy collecting souls. Like, that's yes. it, you know?
Yeah, I don't personally need more than that.
Right, and I think it's either. Fine.
Yeah.
And I think that he also brought up something I didn't catch. Like, his name is Jack Ferryman, and it's supposed to be, like, a reference to, like, the ferryman who takes people to the afterlife. But in this case, he only takes them to hell. You know, like,
I don't know this.
I think you have to, like, pay a nickel or a quarter or whatever. To yes. him, and he takes you on the boat to the yes. afterlife, and he's a ferryman.
To the afterlife. Yeah. That's the part where I'm like, I've never heard that story.
Okay,
yeah.
Yeah. That's like a thing. So I think it's like supposed to be a reference to that. I don't know.
Okay, cute.
It's kind of fun. I kind of like it.
Yeah.
So Jack asks once more for her to not blow up the ship. But of course, she's completely uninterested in anything that he has to say. And when Jack realizes this, he uses his special mind powers to like swing a pole thingy into Epps, making her drop the trigger and sending her flying into the water. Because this is a flooded room, but they've been standing on like a raised structure, so now she's in the water. A fight ensues in the water, and a little scuffle when Epps finally gets her hands on a harpoon. What are you gonna do, shoot me? Jack asks, but Epps's eyes dart elsewhere and land upon the drop trigger. She aims and fires, setting off the C4. The whole ship explodes, and we watch a piece of shrapnel rip through Jack's body. As the ship sinks, we can see souls swimming out of cracks and away from the boat. And it's very, like, beautiful, hopeful music. And Epps is still within the flooded ship. So Katie appears, gesturing her which way she needs to go to escape.
Aww.
Epps follows Katie and gets out into open water where we can, again, see all these souls, like, swimming to freedom. And Katie smiles at Epps before disappearing into the water with the other souls. Epps swims to the surface as the ship sinks below. She grabs onto a floating suitcase, and we sort of like montage time jump as Epps floats through the sea, holding onto the suitcase. Mm-hmm. She's fallen asleep and is suddenly awoken by the sound of a ship horn. Another ship has seen her, and they are going to rescue her. Now we're cut to the ship docking on shore as an ambulance pulls up for Epps. She is stretchered out and loaded onto the ambulance, and she's looking a little rough, understandably so.
Mm-hmm.
And as she lays there, the ambulance door is still open. She can see in the background crates of gold being loaded off the ship. Her eyes go wide. Right behind them walks Jack. He glances over at her, and she sits up with a "no," and the movie ends. Yeah. I don't know how he got there, but he did.
Literally how?
I don't know.
I mean, I guess he can't be killed by anything.
Yeah, he wasn't dead, and, but I don't know how he got there. The ship sinking would kill him, but it didn't. So I don't know. I don't know.
Or like he failed his mission, so he's like transported back to whatever hell.
Right.
You know.
That's what I would think. It's not how it goes, but it's just like a silly fun yeah, whatever. Ending.
I do see why it would be so low. But I wouldn't put it very low either because it's just like cheesy, fun camp with some real twists that are really cool. So,
Yeah, I think it's like a very below average but middle of the road film that's just kind of cozy and like does what it needs to do. The fun thing about that, it's not fun. I don't know what it is, but it's an interesting fact, I suppose. Mm-hmm. The script was initially something so different. And when the actors signed on, they thought they were signing on to script one, and they didn't find out the script got changed until like filming.
Oh.
The initial script was supposed to be a psychological thriller where they all were going crazy and seeing shit. And then they switched it to literal supernatural. And so it turned into a much more like cheesy film than it was initially supposed to be. So like I think the person who plays Epps, like I think she's like completely disowned the film because she like kind of hates what they did.
Yeah.
Just because they thought they were doing something a little more complex.
Right.
And then it just got, you know, very silly, goofy, haunted house style horror, which I enjoy.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's just, I don't know, it's really cool when you read about like the ways that they shot certain things and obviously they had to use miniatures for certain things, but also like they built half a ship and like would have to do things like reverse the camera, whatever. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Nothing crazy, but I enjoyed it.
Amazing.
Yeah. I have four questions for you. in this act. And 3A is a new sort of question. I've never done a question like this.
Ooh.
So when playing rock, paper, scissors, which do you choose? Rock, paper, or scissors?
I bet my average definitely comes out to scissors the most.
You get a 90%.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I also chose scissors. I think
when
I think about it, it's just like the easiest one that like comes out.
I don't know why. I think I probably do scissors like 2/3 of the time, and then I split the rest into rock and paper.
Yeah, I think exactly. I'm with you. Dodge did paper when it was like who's going under. So
yeah,
you did scissors, you beat him out.
Amazing.
As Dodge, do you let Jack go find Epps when he like fights back and is like, I'm going to see what she's up to? Do you let him?
I'd fight on it because she was very clear about that.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say I'm going to go down. Yeah, I'm going to go down to like a 25.
Okay.
I'll try my best.
Wow. I did an 86. Just because I think I would like tell him not to, but if he like really fought me on it, I wouldn't try that hard. Cause like I don't really understand the situation yet. And I don't necessarily know that he's evil and all that. But like if he's fighting me on it, I'm like, fine, go, you know?
Yeah.
I just don't think I'd fight that hard.
I think because of like how serious she seemed.
Yeah.
That's the only reason why. But I don't know if I'd really fight or if I'd just like argue with him, be like, no, like,
right.
But I do think I would get to the point where I would realize and he would realize that I know you can't be trusted, and then that would fuck me over.
Right.
Because I think I would fight enough to get to that point.
Sure, sure. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Do you decide to blow up the ship?
Gotta do it. That little girl.
Mm-hmm.
It is crazy, though, that she did it while she was still inside. Like, she didn't know that little girl was could have helped her get out.
Right.
So I don't know if I'm that brave. I would try to from outside of the ship, and I don't know if that would be successful.
Sure.
Blowing it up from the inside, I'm going to go 63.
Okay. You're better than me. I did 15. I think I would be too scared to blow up the ship.
Oh.
Not that I wouldn't want to. I just think I would be like, that's scary. I mean, they know what they're doing. So it's like.
Right. Yes. I'm taking that into account.
You definitely have to take that into account. But I don't know. I feel like I don't know if I would even recognize that that's the right thing to do.
Because
that would also be part of it for me. So, yeah.
Fair.
Our final question. Can you use the harpoon to hit the trigger before Jack gets you? It's like across the room, sitting on like a ledge, and she shoots it.
Okay, I'm going to go I'm going to be generous with myself and I'm going to go 17.
Nice. No, that I did 8, so like
I
doubt I'm going to do it cuz I don't even know how to operate a harpoon. I don't know how those things work and I don't have good aim, so
it's
unlikely to happen for me.
Which I'm stuck now on. I'm still thinking about that third question. That kind of answers our question that I brought up before. I was like, would you help a ghost?
Because
you were like, I don't even know if that's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And I was like, I have to help the girl.
Right.
But
oh, true.
That answers my questions. Like, apparently I would fall for it. Even though in this case, she was, you know, a real victim. But she might not have been.
True.
Okay. So I did drop.
Okay.
To a 49%.
I was a 50. Look at us. So cute.
Which brings my overall to a 58%.
A 58. Okay. I'm not surprised that you're higher than me. I was a 46. So that brings
But who had the better time? I think you did.
I did. I think I did. That's going to bring our final score to a 52. Look at us always right in the middle. This is a big one, too. At the end of the day, it's like, did you go or not? Is a big part of it, is probably the biggest part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. I feel like it makes enough sense. It's kind of like, it's actually pretty good for a supernatural film. Usually I feel like in supernatural films, like we are screwed. But this one gives you at least the ability to control your fate a little bit.
I agree. Yeah, I think it comes off more lighthearted.
Yes.
Specifically because of the ending. Like the very end.
It's so like goofy.
Yeah.
And over the top, but
so yeah, we're 50-50. I feel like I'm not very intimidated by Jack.
No, he doesn't come across as
I think that's a big reason why we are as high as we are given the supernatural. He's not a very intimidating villain.
No, he's not at all. Especially because he plays this like kind of timid nice guy for most of the movie. So yeah, that is Ghost Ship. Thank you guys so much for tuning in and hanging out with us this week. As always, check out the links below to find our Instagram, Patreon, and Discord, where you too can fill out an interactable worksheet to get your own score. So let us know. Would you survive?